think. I hope. Let's see. Hi, my name is Maya. I am the streaming consciousness. I've decided to do a podcast tonight because I have a new microphone and a mind to abuse it. So I apologize in advance. I don't expect anybody to be listening to this. I guess I'm just kind of fiddling around. I don't know what I want to talk about. What do I want to talk about, Pip? I have Pip here. Pip is my co-host. She is a almost 2-year-old, half British short hair, half Maine Coon. It's a very interesting combination. She's decided to join me by sitting on my leg or resting against my leg. I call her a stealth snuggler because she's all about the cuddling, and usually she doesn't really care to cuddle with me. She usually prefers to cuddle with my other cat. So let's see what else. Oh, I should say things about myself. Well, who cares about me? You guys don't really care about me. Not yet. I haven't really given you a reason to. Well, I was thinking about something before I started. And now I have no idea what to talk about. I have just got this new snowball mic, which I really kind of, I gotta say, I love. I know that there are more expensive and better mics out there, but this is my first, like, standalone, serious microphone mic that feels like it should be used for some sort of purpose. I don't know. It's just sitting there all round and cute. It feels like it needs to be used. So here I am. This is pretty much a show about nothing. I am not not Frasier, but Seinfeld. Seinfeld. Now, there was a show that I really liked it when I first started watching it, which wasn't until, you know, years in, because I have this whole thing about watching things when they're popular. I don't like to. So it was in reruns by the time I started watching. They syndicated. But I kind of felt like I stopped watching it because at some point I started realizing I really don't like these people. I don't like them at all. They're kind of mean and they don't seem to really care about anybody else. And I got bored with that after a while. It was funny in the beginning. I mean, in the beginning, it was, you know, it was funny to watch George double dip and Elaine dance crazy and Kramer come in the door, pretty much. That was like my favorite part of the show, watching him come in the door. I didn't enjoy Jerry at all, ever. So I felt pretty smug by the last episode, you know, because I did, you know, I tuned in early enough to have the opportunity to watch the final episode on the final day. And I had stopped watching the show regularly long before. And I felt pretty smug watching that show, watching that episode, because I thought, yeah, you know, these are horrible people. And I am so glad that I checked out of the show and am not now here feeling like I have been watching like really kind of awful people and enjoying their company for the past however many years. So that's one show. What did interest me was, like, I started watching Friends again because, you know, Netflix no longer has it, which I'm crying over. I am rooting so hard for Netflix. You know, they say Stan thing and Stan, I don't know. I'm not a millennial, so I am not really equipped to, like, talk effectively about Stanning, but I love Netflix. I joined it in 2002. at the same time as I got my DVD player, which I was really late into the game on. So I decided to get my DVD player when I joined Earthlink because they were offering a fr I off I joined Earthlink because they were offering a free DVD player, and I could not see the point of using any media player that did not allow you to record. Because remember, before DVDs, it was mostly VCRs, which allow you to record and to play. And I was like, what's the point of buying things when you can't buying the thing when you can't record on it? I'll just stick with the VCR. Oh my gosh, yes, I know that sounds really horrible now. But then it made total sense. So here I was. I rented Bounce and fell in love. It was the perfect movie to rent with a new DVD player because it was there that you saw the point of them. You know, with Bounce, there was the audio commentary by the director was just so exciting to me. To listen to him talk about the performances, et cetera, et cetera. It was like film school-y. And I was very, and I thought, okay, I get it. I totally get DVD players. So then I joined Netflix, and I have really been a member for the most part. And, you know, I've put my membership on hold here and there for like 17 years now, 18 years now. And when the whole thing went down with Netflix, you know, and their streaming, you know, so I was around before streaming, and then I was in the early days of streaming when they had the entire series of Law and Order on there, and like Columbo and nature documentaries that you didn't really want to see. You know, I mostly watched Columbo and Law and Order. There was another show that Murder, She Wrote, I think. Yeah, that was fun. I used to sleep to Murder, She Wrote. Man, I miss Murder, She Wrote. I wonder if I have insomnia. Anyway, so when Netflix had its issue with the networks not wanting to license content to them, and then they decided to do House of Cards. And there, you know, everybody, well, not everybody, but there were plenty of people who were like, this is crazy. You know, it's a ridiculous idea and it's super expensive and a huge risk. It's like $100 million. It was unprecedented. They were trying to get Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones, HBO was not cooperating. And it felt to me very much like an effort to muscle them out of the business, which is just so ridiculously stupid. And annoying to me. I don't understand corporations and their need to own everything and to be number one in everything. I mean, there's enough things to go around. There's enough like time, space, etc., whatever to go around. What the hell? So anyway, that's my crazy thing. But when Netflix decided to do Game of Thrones, when it was first announced, I was so on board. I was like, you know, you go Netflix, you will make this work, I hope. Because I really want you to win this battle. And it was exciting. And House of Cards took off like nobody's business. And they started making more and more content, and it was really special stuff for the most part. And that was very exciting. And you know, then you know, Friends came, and I was very excited about that. And I don't know how I got here from there. This is totally, you know, me being totally stream of consciousness. But now we're back here again with them losing Friends because the licensing fees were just way too high. So I decided to do like a what you call it. What's the word I'm looking for? Like a nostalgia tour and watch Friends. It was fun. It was exciting to kind of like go back through all these years later and rewatch. And the world has changed so much. That's, I mean, I still love the show. Don't get me wrong. I can watch it and enjoy it tremendously, but I am exquisitely aware of how much the world has changed since Friends first aired. The whiteness of it continues to strike me. But that's what one of the things that struck me a lot, really hugely, kind of the homophobia, low-key homophobia that was sort of rampant, which you kind of got with Chandler's character because, especially with Chandler's character and Joey's too, because, Joey's Mr. Macho Man. Do not impugn his masculinity, my masculinity, although Joey never used a word like impugn in his entire life. And then you had Chandler with his sensitivities because his dad is, a drag queen and gay and all of that stuff that came about when he was a kid. So you kind of got, like, character-wise, what some of it, but a lot of it was just really unexamined, which is fine. And it kind of made me. I struggled with it, though, at first, when I first started my little retrospective of Friends, because I've become way less patient about representation. I'll admit it. I hardly ever I rare I don't watch a lot of network shows, because I'm rarely satisfied with the representation offered on offer there. And it's not a moral stand or anything like that. I'm just not interested anymore. I've heard all these stories. There's a certain perspective. Every writer has a voice, and I do believe every group of people has a perspective. And all of our stories have been told from a very, very narrow male white perspective for such a long time. It is, I can kind, I know where every story is going when I enter it, when they are written from that perspective. And it doesn't necessarily even have to be all male or an all white writing room in order for that effect to take place, because this is just how our stories have evolved, and this is how we un how we recognize them from this perspective. So even when there is a little bit, which there is really not a whole lot of diversity in the writing room, you still get this perspective, and I'm so bored by it. It's not even a question of, although it is a little of, people, everybody should be able to be shown, et cetera, et cetera. That is, it's a fair point, but it's, hey, Castell. Oh. I have a listener or had a listener who left. I'm gonna say hello. So these are like our stories that are being told from this very narrow perspective. And even with how some storylines are handled, that I think that is probably the thing that I noticed the most, is how unexamined shows are, content was. For instance, just the oh my gosh, I'm not gonna remember her name, Rachel. The Rachel's, no, not the Rachel storyline, but the oh gosh, I've just watched all of these. What was his wife's name? The British wife. Played by, and I can see her face, and her name is on the tip of my tongue. I think I probably remember her, the actor's name, much more clearly than I do the character's name, which is sad. So Chandler's wife, I mean, not Chandler's, but Ross's wife. It was so, it's like, dude, you said another woman's name during your wedding. Like, did he say it twice? I can't remember. And I'm trying to imagine my reaction to that. My reaction to that would have been, Yeah, of course you continue the wedding because you're. I don't know. Would I continue the wedding? I don't know for sure. If it was, if I, I'm getting married in my dress in front of all my friends and family. The groom comes out with another woman's name, and I do what exactly? I'm not sure what I'd do. It's possible I'd stop the wedding. Entirely possible that I would stop the wedding. But she didn't. She decided to go ahead with it because, there all the food is bought and parties planned, etc., etc. So she goes through the wedding. Sorry, noise, because I'm trying to move the microphone to a more tenable position. So she goes through the wedding, but I think that the way the storyline was handled was like, oh, that, oh gosh, I can't, Elizabeth? How dare she, make these crazy demands? She's so uncool. When Ross was trying to get her to come to the States. She doesn't want her Ross to see Rachel, blah 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 blah, etc. And I just thought, that's the craziest thing I ever heard. I mean, I would insist at the very minimum on having my on everything. I would construct our, I don't think I'd move. I don't think I'd move from my home country. But the way, the story's handled, it's anybody who gets in the way of what the friends want is the bad guy and a terrible person and morally unokay, which is fine. It is a way of handling it. But I don't think it's, and but it's a very unexamined way of handling it. And I think that's what I mean when I'm talking about perspective, writing from this particular very narrow view of the world. So you have white men writing about women and Indian people and Native American people and Asians and African Americans and poor people and rich people and the middle class and all of these people are seen through the lens of a particular kind of experience, which is unfortunately one which it does not lend itself easily to being well examined. Because when you're a white guy, you have to, the amount of adjustment you have to do to other cultures and women and orientations, it's very limited because the world's kind of made for you. The world is kind of made for you to move through reasonably comfortably. I personally, I think I can write from a lot of different perspectives, but I'm not, I mean, as a woman of color, I am not crazy enough to think that I can write from all of the perspectives, that I can show all the sides all the time. But I'm probably better equipped to write for white people than most white people are to write for black people. This is just the truth. Because I grew up around white people, I grew up in a mostly white area, gone to school, worked mostly white areas. It is just, and you learn the lingo. You learn the lingo, you learn the perspectives because, people very often talk to you as if, how to put it? People often will talk to you. Hey, Doclar. Doclar? Doclar. Welcome. But people will often talk to you about their life. I mean, I was one of those people, like, I'd be sitting at the bus station and somebody would bus, the bus waiting thingy. What's it called? Bus stop. And someone would sit down next to me and then start telling me their life story. And so, but I'm not crazy enough to think that I can write from all the perspectives. I can't write everything. I just can't. As much as I would love to think so, I can write and control the characters in my little universe. But if I'm going to write about an experience very, very different from my own, And first, I'm going to do a lot of research. And some of that research, a lot of that research will involve talking to people and listening to people. And second, I have to be open to getting it wrong. I have to be open to hearing when people say, yeah, that's that, Vietnamese shopkeeper, or it's such a stereotype. What are you doing? I have to be open to that. And so, part of this is like jealous writer talking, but part of it is like bored viewer talking. There are so many times that I will begin a show, especially when you're talking network, because network is, the power structures there are very, very well entrenched. Hi. I'm rambling. I don't know how I don't know what I'm going to be talking about, but right now I am talking about why I'm sort of bored and disinterested in most of what most TV these days. But the power structures in network television are very entrenched. And so even if the writer's room is diverse, there is a particular perspective that is expected. There's a particular sound, there's a particular voice in the stories that are told that are expected, that's expected to come across, because otherwise the powers that be get really uncomfortable. And so even if you want, it's just too hard. So, but I do find myself, I can, I, you know, I'll start watching something and I'll think, well, I know what's going to happen next. This is going to happen. And then that character will probably do that. And then that will do that. Share the live show. How do I do that? I mean, what do you mean? This is like the f well, I think I've done one other podcast, but this is the first one I've done in a long time. How do I do that? I'm open to suggestions. So if I share it, okay. Click share. Oh, that's like for just that's just for social media though, right? I haven't I'm just rambling at this point. I don't know why I started. Let's see. What can I do? What things can I do if I click? Oh, I like your picture. Oh, that's so pretty. Dochar. And what fascinates me about when I encounter programming that is written where you can just really tell that the writer's room is diverse and it's about different kinds of characters, it is fascinating. Because people start doing things you don't expect them to. I'll be watching a show, and for instance, there's a show called All Rise, which I started watching. And I'm not huge into, like I said, me and network TV is not like, I don't know how this works. Yeah, me and network TV are not the best of friends. But I love and I love courtroom shows. I love them so much. And like I will rewatch Law and Order, Happy Happy Camper for I don't know. I have rewatched it many times over the years. I watch Law and Order to go to sleep, and not SVU. Classic Law and Order. Okay, I gotta admit I am a classic Law and Order girl. Oh, and a Criminal Intent girl because I'm a little in love with Vincent D'Onofrio and Chris Noth and what's his name? Jeffrey Goldblum. So anyway, in love with those guys. And these shows follow a particular pattern. The judges tend to be kind of dry and boring, with a little snark thrown in here and there. It is a very pro pros tends to be a very pro prosecution outlook, which is, fine. And fun. Well, but you kind of know what how and that's and Law and Order has really set the pattern for us for how court shows work now, for the most part. But you take a show like All Rise, and I don't know, I think I just had a moment. I had a moment when the judge on the show, she's a black woman, she goes to sit on the bench and she's approaching things from a perspective of like understanding what it's like for people entering the system, which is fresh. It's a fresh perspective. It's a different, it's not the way these stories are usually told. We've always been all about, it's about the crime and it's about catching the guy and then prosecuting the guy. And I always have very mixed feelings because I'm like, whenever Law and Order would start, I'd be like, the crime would be revealed. I'm like, oh, horror. Oh my God, I can't believe that person did that. And I am gonna, and that crime, I can't believe that happened. And it's so horrible. And that crime needs to be solved. Okay, so they solve the crime. Start prosecuting the guy or girl, whatever. And they start prosecuting. And then when it starts, I start to feel bad. I start to feel guilty. I start to feel sad for the people who are, I feel sorry for him because, because of course then their sob story comes on and you're like, oh gosh, oh, now I feel bad for him. Oh, I don't really want him to get convicted, but he really should be convicted and blah, blah, blah. But not really. But the story. Oh, well, thank you. Oh, that is so sweet. Thank you so much. Okay. Oh, I was gonna type it, but I was like, you can hear me. I'm not really, I've never really seen a court show that really examined how people interact with the justice system. It's difficult and it's scary, and somehow the show was able to recognize that and still manage to kind of keep a light tone, and a little bit of fight the power to it, and also recognition of how like crazy liberal California is, because it kind of is in a lot of ways. You have, I mean, it's a little hippie, it's a little hippie town, it's a little hippiesville. But also how even those who are in working within the justice system, how things like race and and economics and class interact when you're out of it. Like one of the court officer was stopped because he was running, well, he was running while black, essentially. And so he was stopped by the police, and how that felt to him, what that was like for him. He was, thrown to the ground and handcuffed and all of that stuff. I thought, I don't think I've ever really seen this before. And that's what happens when you have different perspectives in the writer's room, influencing the story and the dialogue, and really, and the head writer's really paying attention to that. And they're not being, because there's a thing that happens when you are in the minority. And you go into a place, what you have learned to do is assimilate. You learn to sort of, you kind of become a chameleon. You learn how to seem as much like everyone else as possible so that nobody gets uncomfortable, so that you still keep, your job and you are able to progress in your chosen career, et cetera, et cetera. So you're not going to be too, you don't want to be too alien to them. And to ask, like, that person who is trying to navigate all of that, to ask that person to also check the diversity, to be the diversity police as well, is just unfair. Unless what you're doing is saying, hey, I want to know what I'm hiring you because I want to know what you think. I want you to give me ideas that I would never have thought of because my experiences probably are very different from yours. And give them permission to guide and to lead. I think that writers' rooms are very white and male, and white male power structure structurally in the network world especially. And one of the things I love about Netflix is, and streaming services, but Netflix especially, because, what can I say? I guess I do stand for Netflix. Is that they are really, really re recognizing that their service needs to look like the people that they're serving. I watched they had Brené Brown do they you know she did the special on Netflix called Call to Courage, which if you haven't seen it, and you have Netflix, Dochar, please, you should. It is just beautiful. It's a beautiful, amazing special. But before she did that, she did a talk at Netflix for the employees that was publicized with their diversity executive. I don't know what they called her. But she said, in order to succeed, in order to really do well, you need to look like your service needs to look like the people that you're serving. And Netflix seems to be taking that on. They have, shows written by women, shows written by women of color, shows written by people of different ethnicities and orientations and nationalities. And it is very, very diverse. And it's very, very exciting and very cool. And you watch a show and you don't always know what's going to happen. And sometimes you do. Sometimes you'll watch a particular show has a particular voice and you're like, a white dude. And that's fine. I mean, I grew up on White Dude. I speak White Dude very, very fluently, and I love White Dude. Just do. What can I say? It's very relaxing. It's a very relaxing tone, very comforting, very, because I'm used to it. It's what I, what I, what I, it is how we all grew up. That is what we all grew up listening to, hearing, watching, seeing, is various types of white dudeness. In the writing of shows. And so what happens, okay, here's the big first moment, and I'll get back to Netflix in a second, but the biggest deal for me was there was a movie that I saw called Something New, and I'm not gonna remember the name of the actors, which is really gonna upset me because Sanaa Lathan and Simon Baker. Oh, thank goodness. I actually interviewed, actually, a long time ago, back in the day, I was an entertainment re reporter, journalist online in the early days of the internet, of internet journalism. And I actually interviewed the writer of that movie. She wrote for a show called, what was her name? Chris something. Anyway, she wrote for a show called Everybody Hates Chris. That was produced by Chris Rock, and she said that she decided to write something new because she was like talking. I guess she and Chris at one point were having a conversation, and she was talking about, the dearth of black men for women who are upwardly mobile black women, and who are also upwardly mobile. Black men who are also upwardly mobile. And Chris said, you need to expand your options. Black men are not the only men in the world. And she said she never thought of that before, dating a white guy, or dating outside of a race. So she ended up writing this movie kind of out of that experience, out of that experience of talking to her girlfriends and then talking to her boss and have and the conversations. So this upwardly mobile, not even middle class, but like upper middle class white black woman, ends up dating her landscape designer, landscape architect, landscape something. There's landscape. There's not. He's not a landscaper only because he didn't just. He was like, redo. She was redesigning her garden. So he. Is re he's doing that for her. Simon Baker, who is so pretty. Simon Baker is so pretty. Okay, I'm not gonna go there. And they just and she decides to date him. And I'm watching the movie. I'm in the theater, like watching the movie, and There's this moment after they spend their first night together, and he reaches out and he touches her hair and he tells her, "Oh, it'd be so not much prettier if you went natural." All right, she flips out. She fully flips out. She jumps out of the bed and yells at him, "Don't touch my hair," and "You don't talk about it." And I felt as if someone had stripped me naked in the middle of the theater, because I was like, I didn't know that we were allowed to talk about the hair thing publicly. I didn't know that we were allowed to talk about black women and their hair. I didn't know. I felt like she was like putting our dirty laundry out on the street, and I was not happy. For a minute, it was really uncomfortable. And that was like the first time I really realized the difference it makes to have someone tell stories about you, about your experiences, because there are specific experiences that are specific only to African American women when it comes to hair, and they are huge. They are like really big, and it is never really talked about or addressed in anything you watch. Every once in a while, someone will do a movie on hair. Like Chris Rock did Good Hair, which is wasn't even like a very good movie about hair. Hi, Carrie. Welcome. I'm rambling. So it, and it was just, and I had that experience like for the first time of unexpectedly, really, in a way, having someone tell a story about me, and it was really uncomfortable, honestly. And then it was really amazing. And that movie came and went with barely a ripple. Hardly anybody noticed it. And then years passed, and suddenly we're in a new age where everybody is talking about representation. Everybody wants to be seen and wants their stories told and wants other people to see them, wants other people to see their stories. And it's kind of like we've reached a point where it was weird, new, exciting, and now we've reached this place where it is expected. And I will admit that I have lost a lot of my patience with the standard ways of telling stories. I love, I'm trying to think of some Netflix things that I've really enjoyed. Okay, so like Jennifer Jones, amazing. I couldn't even finish that show because there were so many things that were so peculiar to the way women think and interact in the world. There's that, because one of the things about Jennifer, apart from her issues, she had the standard private eye issues of too much drinking and too little sleep. But she also had the reaction to society's reaction to that in a feminine form. And that is a very specific experience to women. When you see like a hard-boiled detective on a show where the guy's a guy, the detective is a guy, it's expected and it's sort of like, looked on fondly, et cetera, et cetera. But what you recognize sort of as a woman is that you're expected to behave in a way that's appealing, kind of constantly. It's important for people to like you. I don't know why, but it's really important for people to like you when you're a woman. And so it's really neat. And also like the friendships between women, which are very, very unique because men don't have friendships. Welcome back, Dojar. Men, in at least not in the United States, they don't really do friendship in the same way. Women, we get into each other's lives. We are like all about, what happens when something happens in your girlfriend's life is you say, "Oh, they say a thing happened. I met someone, or I'm upset about something." And your answers are almost always like, "Oh my gosh, really? Tell me all about it." Don't, and you will actually say these words sometimes, "Don't leave anything out." And you'll ask questions about the little tiny details. And you are so immersed in each other's little tiny details. It's kind of amazing. It's very intimate. And it's not something, hey, Nick, welcome, yay, hi. And it's not something that you see, it's not a perspective that you see a lot, but Netflix does a really good job of like, just weird story. The stories feel weird, frankly. I mean, I am a woman, I'm of color, and yet watching stories out about by people who are of color and not male, it feels weird to me. It feels very strange because, and I don't know what to expect because people say odd things. You're used to, I'm used to, I'm comfortable with what is usually said in these shows that are not written for, not so much written for or about people of color or who are not male. And I like it. It's a comfort level. But when people start telling your stories, it gets really uncomfortable really fast because you start feeling like there are aspects of your experience that you do not examine that often. And when you do, you choose to. You're like, okay, I am sitting here and I'm ha like here right now. I'm talking to you guys about random stuff, but also like representation and how things are different. Hi, Parminder. But there are things that, and I'm choosing to do that. So I know what's coming next. But when you're watching a show, oh, hey. I'm pushing the button. I don't know how to, I hope I'm doing this right. Hey, Parminder. Welcome.
Hello.
I
Thanks,
think I should
man.
have my headset on or something. Probably. That would probably be helpful. Are you talking? Oh man, I should totally have my headset on. Just a sec. Just a sec. Let me change my settings. Really fast. Is it's gonna get a lot really feedbacky really fast. GG for the dead air, you guys. Now, if only I could get this to work, that would be good. How is it that I'm not able to plug this in suddenly? Oh, it's the right way up. Headset. All right. Recording. Yes. All right. So hopefully I can get you to come through my headset, which is not happening. Hello? Hey, now you can talk. It is safe. Parminder, do you have anything to say? Okay. If you don't have anything to say, I'm gonna have to cut the call. Hello, hello, hello. All right, I'm gonna cut the call. So, I was just, but I guess I'll go back to talking about the discomfort of suddenly having someone tell your story. So you have to suddenly examine yourself in a way that you weren't planning to or weren't expecting. And it's uncomfortable having stories told about you when you're not used to having stories told about you, is my point. But I wanted to get back to Netflix. Went on a huge ramble in the wrong direction. I'm curious as to what's going to happen next because, Netflix lost their deal, lost, decided not to renew their deal for Friends and a couple of other of their juggernauts. Like Friends brought in a lot of money for them. And there was another show, I can't remember the name of it, that they also let go. Nope, it's not coming to me. Last year at the same time. So the question for me is like, what are they going to do? I do feel like I'm glad that they're doing more family-centric programming, or not family-centric, but at least, because I am a network TV girl. That's what's funny is that I'm saying, oh, I'm so bored with network TV and, you know, white male perspective, but I really love it. I am a network TV girl. And yeah, I do want more different kind of stories, but I also don't want to go full on rated R with every single television episode I watch, every single television show I watch. And I don't want to have to choose between rated R and absolute kids show. I would like stories that are told. Hi, Mimi. Welcome. I'm so glad to see you. And welcome back, Nick. I would like to see shows that are... Can you make Murder, She Wrote type TV now? Diagnosis Murder type... Oh, I feel so old saying that. No, not Diagnosis Murder. That was never my jam. But... like, maybe not Diagnosis Murder, but more like Law and Order. Can you make, welcome back, Dochar. Can you make like Law and Order style television where it is formulaic? It is relatively, I'm going to say inoffensive, given the number of bodies that they've dropped on that show over the years. Okay, let's say relatively inoffensive. Where you just feel like you could watch the show without having to worry that someone is going to die in a horribly gruesome way on screen. Or that, you know, they're going to drop a thousand F-bombs in one episode. I like network TV. I like that feeling. I like, you know, turning on a show and kind of knowing what the formula is going to be. And maybe, you know, it isn't comfortable. Representation isn't comfortable for me anyway. Not representation of me is really uncomfortable. And it is fresh and interesting, but is it possible to kind of marry the two, the network sensibility of comfort, escape television, that doesn't make, you know, give you nightmares, which I don't like nightmares, and kind of I hate the word diversity, it's just becoming meaningless, but a multi-perspective storyline, characters, a sense that, you know, when you see an Asian guy on the television, that he is speaking and his character is presented and entering the world in a way that is recognizable to an Asian guy. But that is also feels different to me, because I like that feeling of going, oh, this is new. Hi, Exovum. Welcome to my ramble. So if I had a wish list for Netflix, it would be bring back Law and Order, please, because, you know, I love watching that show going to bed. And B, bring me some shows that are network flavored in the sense of being mostly inoffensive, but also layer that with multiple perspectives, many voices, so that I feel like I'm seeing something new and interesting in terms of the characters, at least. That would be on my wish list as well. I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, there's so many streaming services coming out. Everybody's getting into the game. Everybody wants to dominate the game, which I think it's a particularly destructive corporate way of looking at things. And I'm looking at the shows, they are skewed very young. For the most part, which is fine if that's who you want your audience to be. But the thing is that brand loyalty is kind of an old school value. So people like me who have had Netflix for 18 years, who are old. And so the reason why I stick with Netflix is a sense of loyalty, is a sense of, remembering when they were tiny and being excited about that. And when nobody knew which of these services was actually going to work. So they have to have something for people who've been around them, around Netflix for a long time. And the fact is that playing to that sensibility of stability and et cetera is part of what Friends being so popular was about. It is complicated, but I hope they're able to swing it. Anyway, so this has been me rambling about Netflix and things like that. I don't know if anybody would like to talk about something else. If you have something else in mind that you're interested in talking about or have questions about or things that are on your mind, I am happy to talk about those as well and to talk to you about it if you want to call in or whatever. So I'm morally opposed to Disney Plus. I did get the free trial. And it's very difficult to remain offended by them while the service is like $6 or $7 a month. But I'm managing it so far because I don't like this thing that they're doing of like trying to price certain streaming services out of the game and trying and in order in favor of their own or someone that they have a relationship with, which for instance, I think Amazon streaming has like Iron Man and some of the Marvel movies. They took them from Netflix, made them unavailable to Netflix, and now they are on a Amazon, which I don't like Amazon. I'm annoyed by Amazon. Amazon does this thing where they have, you buy a channel. Like I have a couple of the British channels because I really love British TV. And so I have a couple of those and I pay every month for them. And then what they do is like, so for instance, I think it was like In the Thick of It. Yeah, I know. I just did this whole thing about not so many F-bombs, please, et cetera, et cetera. All right, so let's go. Yes, Minister. Yes, Minister. Very old show, fun show. And I got it through. I think it was BritBox that I have it through. And then not that long afterward, it became available on BritBox, like a few months later, it suddenly becomes available on Amazon Prime, which I get for free with like my Amazon Prime membership. And I get really annoyed when they do stuff like that. I'm like, because they and they were and they do it fairly regularly. It's like they are examining who how much how popular certain shows are on their channels that they have relationships with, and then bringing those shows to Prime. And so as a channel subscriber, you have the dual frustrations of subscribing to a channel that you're paying for because you want this particular content, and then having this particular content, but not all of it, just enough of it to really annoy you, made available via a service that you for which you pay no extra cost. So I don't like Amazon, and I don't really want to be like supporting Amazon. That's not like my jam. I don't stand for Amazon. I have Amazon, but I don't stand for Amazon. I don't even know what I'm talking about. I've never heard Stan used in a sentence. I don't know how to use it properly. I am too old to use Stan, but I like it because it's fun. Anyway, so I want Netflix to do well. And I would like if I had my way, it would be like the old days of television when, in my country, in the United States, you had like when I was growing up, you had five or six channels and you had nights. There were nights when, ABC or NBC or CBS, one or the other had like appointment to view television, but they didn't try to outdo each other quite so much. You know, one night was going to be a heavy NBC night because, you know, they had like Columbo on or whatever. And then another night was going to be, you know, something, it was going to be a CBS night because they had whatever they had on, because I can't remember anything that CBS had on. Because there's room for everybody. There's and consumers are less loyal to brands than they used to be. So you'll lose them the way you got them. If you're trying to tempt them with content, that's great. Except as soon as somebody else gets content that's more interesting, they're gone. So why not like work together because, you know, antitrust, that's not good. But why not be so crazy to dominate the field and instead just do your particular bit of the field really, really well, giving your viewers what they're really, really gonna want. And then and leaving something on the table for the people, the person who, the other company that does something different. I know. I'm Pollyanna. What can I say? I feel this way. And Netflix has been around for a long time. Can you stop trying to kill it? Stop trying to kill Netflix. If they self if they go away, it will be because they self-destructed. And not because it, at least as far as I can see, they seem to have figured out innovation. They seem to have figured out how to stay relevant. And they're I think they're always going to be ahead of the game of these companies that are getting into it, big established companies that are getting into these things now. I don't really think that they have a chance because their corporate culture, their corporate structure, their corporate power systems are set up the way they're set up. And so the way they think and the way they innovate is the way they think and the way they innovate. And they're not going to be able to change that and in enough to edge Netflix out of the field. It will have to be Netflix. Netflix is like, they're like, they are mobile, they are agile, they are fierce. You know, you think about then you think about Hannah Gadsby's special, comedy special. You think about that they are the first person to the first streaming service to do like to have a shame researcher, an academic, give an academic a 1 hour special. That's crazy. But they did it, and it was huge. It was a huge success. They think in ways that I think big companies just aren't going to think. Welcome back, Mimi. At least for now, I am interested to see how they will adapt to not having friends. I'm hoping that they will continue to try to serve the friends audience instead of trying to catch a new audience. I mean, you can do both, but I'm hoping that they don't sacrifice the friends audience, the people who came and like put friends on to binge watch as a comfort thing. And so they make, I would like to see them make comfort TV. I love comfort TV. So anyway, this is my first, and I don't know how I spoke for an hour. I have no idea what I talked about because it was very spur of the moment. Thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate, you know, those who come in to say hi. And I have no idea when I'm gonna do this again, but I hope that if I do it again soon, that you will catch me. And so for now, I'm gonna say good night. And I'm going to thank you all for coming, and I hope you have a wonderful day. Take care. Hey, peace. I'm so sorry. I'm just closing out. Good night.